is the Bearcast, presented by Bird Cultchin Ford. Bird Cultchin Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoak and Grayson Grundhaver.
And hello, welcome into a brand new edition of the Bearcast on this Tuesday, December the 10th, 2024. I am Craig Smoak, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver, also Garrett Ross behind the scenes, and we are with you for the next 60 minutes or so. We'll see, 60 to 90, just kind of depends on what the flow of the news is over the course of the next hour plus, but with you here for a little bit to talk about all things Baylor Athletics, as usual, as we do just about every week of the year, which, speaking of, we are at the tail end of, and we are going to have a show next week, and then we'll have Christmas break. But what we'll also have this year that we did not have last year is discussion about the postseason when it comes to Baylor football, as they are officially headed to the Texas Bowl to take on LSU on December the 31st, New Year's Eve afternoon in Houston at NRG Stadium, a game the Bears played in not that long ago, defeating the Vanderbilt Commodores with Matt Rhule. It was kind of a launching pad type game for the program at the time, and not sure what it will be here, but it will be interesting as Dave Aranda faces his former team, the team that he left as a national championship defensive coordinator to come and become a head coach for the first time in his career. So there's a big tie-in right there, Grayson. And after all the speculation, all the different projections, and all of the, just curiosity about where the Bears would be heading this postseason, there's a lot of different options out there. We could have been talking about going to Memphis, could have been talking about going to Phoenix, could have been talking about playing like right after Christmas or right before Christmas, and I don't know about you, but for me, this scratches a lot of itches for me. It's a great opponent. It's a nice location, and it's convenient on an afternoon on New Year's Eve, so you don't really disrupt the holidays all that much. For me, at least, and we'll hear from you, obviously, I think this is a home run site for the 8-4 Baylor Bears.
It absolutely is. I mean, we talked about it during the week, and I've talked about it a lot. You know, this one or the Pop-Tarts Bowl were kind of the top two on my list. Pop-Tarts Bowl obviously would have required a lot more travel, but just the feeling of you're getting two really good opponents, right? So, like, Pop-Tarts Bowl has Miami in it now. This one, LSU, those are two big-time programs. And to me, that was the most important factor in the bowl game that Baylor went to. They really need to play someone with a big brand. And the Big 12 really needs that, to be honest. I mean, you look around the landscape of college football, and all you hear from national media is just the Big 12 isn't good, or the Big 12 shouldn't have X, Y, and Z, or Arizona State is way overranked and shouldn't have the number four seed. So you have to change that narrative. And in order to do that, you have to win these type of games. So I think this is great for Baylor, great for the Big 12. And honestly, you know, from the Baylor perspective, you know, LSU is a big time program recruiting wise as well. And I'm not saying Baylor's going to win a lot of recruiting battles against LSU, but playing a team that you do recruit against at times, again, is also very important. We've seen Baylor take advantage of that this season. We'll see if they can do that again against LSU. But yeah, in general, I think this is a great matchup, a great opportunity to put Baylor's brand up against a blue blood brand, which I do believe LSU is.
Yes, they most certainly are, and they are, I'd say, a top 15 to 20 current program nationally. I think that's very fair to say. So it's a big-time opponent. Now, what version of the Tigers shows up, we'll see. They already have a lot of opt-outs, and that's become a storyline. They obviously have a lot of, angst building up right now with Brian Kelly, just disappointing where they've finished the last couple of years. I mean, last year you had the Heisman Trophy winner. You had a pretty good year. This year, though, pretty forgettable for the most part, and I think it's been long enough now under his tenure where they're not really pounding on the national championship door, where it's create a little bit of friction there, a little bit of impatience, I think, building for Brian Kelly and just the overall expectations at LSU. But this is a matchup that ought to be very interesting. Not sure, you know, from the LSU perspective, how fired up they are. Let's just be honest. Like, I mean, I don't know if they saw Baylor pop up. They're like, oh, man, I can't wait to get down to Houston. But I know for a lot of Baylor fans, they saw LSU pop up, and they're like, damn, I can't wait to get down to Houston. So I think it'll be a big pull for the Bears. And I think it sure beats the day after Christmas in Phoenix for the Rate Bowl. I don't know, maybe some people would have really enjoyed that, but I'd rather be home for Christmas rather than traveling to Phoenix. There was, I guess, the Armed Forces Bowl, which we know a lot of people have already had their fill of. That's 2 days after Christmas, so you could have spent a Friday in Fort Worth, Friday 11 a.m. or 2:30.
That one didn't even get filled by a Big 12 team because they sent TCU to New Mexico, which I think is pretty hilarious.
To play Louisiana, yeah. Which I don't know how fired up they are for that matchup either. There was the Liberty Bowl out in Memphis. A couple days after Christmas, also on that Friday. I mean, I could go on and on. Pop-Tarts, as you mentioned, but I like the rather than the weekend right after Christmas, you get that long break, and then you get a nice game there on New Year's Eve, and you can get back home even if you're traveling from Dallas or something and still go out that night for New Year's. So I think it's, again, a win-win from opponent to location. To also the opportunity that they have in front of them. And I do think it's a very interesting opportunity, and I'm curious to hear what Dave Aranda has to say about facing his old team. He doesn't seem like a real sentimental, emotional type of guy, but I bet it's got to be weird for anybody to just look across that first time, the sidelines, and see the team that you were last with. And especially for him, you were last with LSU. You were standing on the field, that very infamous picture of him with confetti raining down as they had just won a national championship, and literally the next day, right, he's interviewing for the Baylor job, and as we know, the rest is history.
It's a very different experience, for sure, and a different team that LSU is now, obviously. You know, they moved on from Ed Orgeron shortly after that, and now Brian Kelly is there, and, you know, I know LSU fans seem to be down on this season. I understand why. They went 8-4, but I'm going to be honest with you. I think if they played Texas's schedule, they would probably be a 10-2 team. And so, like, you go through and look at the teams that they played. I mean, they had to play Florida at a terrible time when Florida started to peak. They lost Alabama, got crushed by them. That's fine. They faced A&M, in which Marcel Reed comes into the game for the first time. They did not game plan for him at all, and he ran all over them. So they weren't exactly given a lot of breaks outside of the South Carolina game, but I do believe all those teams I mentioned, they also beat Ole Miss. Like, their schedule was actually really tough this year compared to some of the other teams in the SEC. So I do think their quality of team is better than maybe their record says. But I will also say that that's probably not the team that Baylor's going to face in the Texas Bowl. I think they're going to lose a lot of guys. I think guys are going to opt out. We've seen a lot of their guys enter the transfer portal this morning and yesterday. So we'll see kind of how that all settles in. But what we do know is, or at least what I expect, is Garrett Nussmeier to still play for them. They're starting quarterback. He's a very good player. And as long as he's playing, I do expect their offense to at least do some things in this game, even if they are missing, you know, some big pieces of their team.
Yeah, this is year three for Brian Kelly. In the first year, they haven't won 10 games or will not win 10 games. 10-4 is debut year, 10-3 last year, and then 8-4 this year, with the possibility, obviously, to go 9-4, and they have won both of their bowl games under Brian Kelly, the Citrus Bowl and also the ReliaQuest Bowl, to get their 10 wins these past 2 years. So they're right in line. They'll fall a game short, so I guess it is a little bit of a step back, but still, you take that 10-4, 10-3, and then maybe 9-4. The problem for him is you're losing to teams you don't need to be losing to, and you're falling short of the grander expectations, including now of just simply making the playoff for, I think, LSU's kind of like a bottom line obligation with the expanded playoffs. So the fact that you didn't even really sniff that leads to it being a disappointment. That and Brian Kelly can be kind of, you know, so sometimes he doesn't sit well with the fan base either. But, yeah, they're 8-4, and they have played a pretty tough schedule, as you mentioned. Opened the season with a loss to USC, 27-20 out in Las Vegas, but then reeled off six straight wins to get bowl eligible just like that, and then had that big three-game losing streak where they fell to number 14 A&M down in College Station, 14 at the time, not ranked now, but fell to them 38-23, got demolished by Alabama in a game where if Sawyer Robertson's watching the tape, he's like, just Jake Spavital, quarterback run, quarterback run. I mean, he's not Jalen Milroe, but you can run on the Tigers if you're a quarterback. That was proven because Alabama watched that tape from Texas A&M and just said, like, all right, we're just going to run Jalen Milroe. And he basically, had a field day. But, lost that game and then turned around and lost to Florida 27-16, closed the season with wins over Vanderbilt and Oklahoma. So there you go. And all throughout, I will say, you mentioned Garrett Nussmeier. He has been really solid. I mean, he's a very good quarterback, and they've also had Caden Durham from Duncanville, who has emerged as well as a young, talented running back, and we know their history at wide receiver. And, yeah, I think it's just a question for them of who plays, but if you get Nussmeier and Durham and a few other guys, that's going to be more than enough to challenge the Bears, I feel like.
And I think Nussmeier is a really good quarterback, like you mentioned. I think that there's been a lot of pushback about that just because he's not Jaden Daniels, and obviously Jaden Daniels is a different kind of talent. But I would say I don't think Nuss has had necessarily the same kind of weapons that their previous teams had. I know Kyron Lacy's really good, but and Mason Taylor, but it just feels like they missed on some guys. CJ Daniels didn't provide the impact that I think a lot of people were thinking. Their run game, yes, Caden Durham's been good, but it hasn't been something that they've been able to rely on every single game, this running attack. And so he's been asked to do a lot. He's been asked to go win them a lot of games. And while he is a really good quarterback, that's a tough ask if you're not going to have a consistent running game day in and day out.
So this will be the 12th meeting between these two teams and the first in quite a long time. Grant Taft was the head coach at Baylor the last time they played LSU. It was 1985. So, yeah, some of you not born, not even close to being born for the younger crowd back in 1985, but that was a 21-7 Baylor win out in Memphis, Tennessee, and I guess that would have been a bowl game out there. I should have actually looked that ahead of time, but yeah, that was the last meeting was in 1985 out in Memphis. Prior to that, had met 3 years in a row in 68, 69, and 70. All of those were LSU wins, but this dates back to 1907. The first meeting between these two teams, they played in 1907 and 1908, and LSU won 48-0 in Baton Rouge in 1907, and then 89-0 in 1908 as they started this off with a dominant beginning. And then in 1911, down in Waco, 6-0 LSU. 1913, 50-0 LSU. So they outscored the Bears in their first four meetings in the 1900s like a billion to zero. They didn't play from 1913 all the way until 1959. So there was a long stretch. LSU also won that game. That was out in Shreveport, 22-0. And then finally in 1960, after five meetings, most of them blowouts, Baylor under John Bridgers gets their first win over LSU in 1960, 7-3. They'd beat them again in Houston in 1963, 14-7, and those were the two Bears wins, and then LSU won again in 68, 69, 70, which I mentioned at the top. So that leads us to then the 1985 game that I started off mentioning, the latest matchup, and 2024 will be the next chapter, the 12th chapter, but LSU leads 8-3, although Baylor did get that last win under Grant Taft in 1985.
That's actually a pretty good record against LSU. I mean, 8-3 with the times that Baylor has had, you know, those stretches where Baylor's been really bad, that's pretty impressive. And honestly, I think going into this game, I think LSU's currently a 3-point favorite going into this one. I expect that line to get much closer to even by the time the game actually kicks off. And who knows, maybe the Bears can get their fourth win. I think I'm kind of expecting that this very moment. We'll see how things change over the course of these practices in this offseason.
Yeah, Dave Aranda is going to speak today, so we'll see what he has to say. I mean, obviously, you've got to ask him about playing LSU and if there's any feelings or emotions there, just strangeness of looking across that sideline and seeing the Tigers logo and the purple and gold and all that. But, yeah, I think we'll have to just see what the next couple of weeks hold in terms of opt-outs and draft declarations and things like that to get a bigger picture. But on paper, I know it's exciting for Baylor fans, and I think most people are pumped up to be going to Houston. Yeah, you'd like to have the big, gaudy bowl trip, but I just don't know that's where that program is right now. Like, I think if they go out and they win 9 games next year, something like that, then I think you'll have people really pumped up. But I think this year just kind of fits to be in Houston. I think it works, not only for convenience, obviously, and Christmas and all of that, but it just, I think it'll bring out a good crowd, especially given that LSU, even if they don't get super ramped up for this. They're going to have fans there. I mean, it's down in Houston, so they're going to have, like, even casual fans will roll in, I think, by a pretty good margin for LSU and for Baylor as well. So I think it'll be a good little matchup. But we'll see, you know, who all still playing in this game by the time it rolls around.
Yeah, I think so too. I think LSU fans, I was talking to Garrett about this. He thinks there's going to be a lot of LSU fans there. And they, I mean, traveling to Houston's not a huge deal for LSU fans at all. They usually travel pretty well in general. I guess my caution was, you know, are they really going to be up for this game? Kind of like, are the players going to be up for this game? I think we have that question going into it. But I would also say, you know, a few years ago, Baylor played a Georgia team that a lot of people were questioning whether Georgia would want to show up for that game. Now, it was the Sugar Bowl, so it was a little bit different, but Georgia sure did, and they had some NFL guys that really took over the game, like George Pickens, Zamir White, and they found a way to get it done. So we'll see kind of what LSU is going to bring to the table in this one. But yeah, I think in general, this is a nice I think point for Baylor to get back to Houston, get back to the Texas Bowl. I will say, I think as you take a step back and look at this season, the grand scheme of it, it's kind of tough to look and go, man, you know, Baylor might be the best team in the Big 12, and they didn't even get to play in the Big 12 championship. And I think that's kind of a tough realization just because the start to the season was just really hard, and they had not peaked yet. And you want to peak at the end of the year, but unfortunately, they weren't able to get those early wins that would have allowed them to stay in the Big 12 race. Now you look back on it, it's like Iowa State, they look like a team that Baylor would beat if they played tomorrow. Colorado, probably a good game, but Baylor looks like they could hang with them. Same with BYU. So that is one takeaway that I have going into this. But yes, in general, this is a great season, a great launching point into next year in which there's going to be very high expectations.
Yeah, I think they pretty much proved as close as you can they could beat Colorado. And I think Iowa State just caught them at the right time and is fading. Now, I don't know if they'd beat Arizona State. I think that'd be a hell of a game. I think you feel good about their chances, but credit to the Sun Devils, the Big 12 champs. They went on, took it, and they dominated Iowa State and didn't leave any doubt about who the, you know, the best team, quote-unquote, in the Big 12 was when those two matched up. But, yeah, there could have been different matchups that maybe would have been better games or maybe would have been two better teams. But I do want to give credit to Arizona State for – you know, just going out there with no expectations, a young head coach and a lot of doubt and running out there and grabbing that championship and taking it, man. That's what you've got to do, and they're better as a result of it. And I think that would have been a heck of a game, though, Baylor and Arizona State. This will also be the fourth Baylor Bowl matchup versus the SEC in their last five bowl trips. They beat Vanderbilt in their last trip to the Texas Bowl back in 2018. They lost to Georgia in 2019 in the Sugar Bowl, beat Ole Miss in 2021 in the Sugar Bowl, and then they obviously played in the Armed Forces Bowl, a non-SEC team in their last outing. So if you're looking at a team that's broken streaks here of late, it's not like this is some long streak, but it has been a couple years, 3 years now since they won a bowl game. So that would be something nice to do since they haven't done that in just a little while. But they are 2-1 in their last three versus the SEC in relatively recent times. Now, of course, that's 0-3 in SEC hypotheticals, of course. But in reality, they're 2-1. So, yeah, another opportunity to at least a little put another notch on the belt, which I don't think is a bad thing.
And, of course, the excuses rein in whenever Baylor does beat an SEC team. And if they win this one, you already know what the excuses are going to be. Oh, LSU had all these opt-outs. That's not the real LSU team. And that's, man, just, that's so,
I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to tell you what. The players can't think about opt-outs and all that and think, hey, we're going to roll in and beat LSU, because, first of all, we don't even know who's playing. Like we're getting a loose idea, some declarations, but I think Baylor's got to treat this as like a college football playoff game.
For sure.
Because, look, in 5 years, if they look back in the record books, like name a person, your cousin, your the next head coach, like whoever, they're not going to go, hey, yeah, I remember that game. Remember all those? They're not going to care about the players that opted out. They're going to be like, hey, Baylor beat LSU. That's all the record books say. So this is an opportunity to get a big win, and you got to treat it as though you're playing Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and all those cats, in my mind, to go out there and get a win. So hopefully that's the focus they have. But, yeah, the Texas Bowl on New Year's Eve day down in Houston at NRG Stadium. We'll be there in some capacity, and looking forward to that matchup and looking forward to just having a bowl game to cover once again. So
absolutely. And quickly, remember, Baylor gets 15 practices for bowl prep. A lot of this is going to be young guys getting reps that would not have gotten reps during the season. This is a great opportunity for them to get those opportunities and to actually maybe run with those opportunities. Those will be spread out during this time period, used in whatever capacity that Dave Aranda and the staff decide, but you get 15 of them. I also think the placement of this bowl game is huge because it's going to allow the players to probably get Christmas break, get a real Christmas break, which I actually think is really nice and special, and you don't honestly get that very much during bowl season. It's sometimes only a day, or sometimes you're playing like right around Christmas and you don't really get a break at all. So I think that's a nice little addition as well, because they'll be able to practice at least once or twice before the bowl game after Christmas.
Yes, and fans and media selfishly also get to have Christmas, yeah, right, and not have it interrupted. That's what I was talking about with that rate bowl. You have it like the day after. I just feel like you'd be sitting on Christmas Day in a hotel in Phoenix and like that. I mean, that you could make that cool, but I'd prefer to not do that. So yeah, I'm happy with that, and I think the players will be happy with that as well. It's kind of what I was getting at earlier. I think it works out really nicely for everybody around the holidays, rather than being all jammed up and traveling cross country, because we've definitely been there, done that before as well on some of these bowl trips. So nice game to look forward to here in what, a little over 2 weeks from now. We'll see them getting suited up, and should be a nice one. I guess actually exactly 3 weeks from now. Exactly 3 weeks from now as we record this. The Bears, one more go-around against the LSU Tigers. So we'll wait what Dave Aranda has to say about that. In the meantime, there will be bowl practices, and that will be very valuable, especially for the younger guys. It will be valuable for the coaches to just get some extra reps in there and just get an idea kind of what they're working with, not only for right now, but also moving forward into next year, a good glimpse of some of the other players on the team that maybe don't get as many practice reps and whatnot, an opportunity for freshmen that come rolling in to kind of just see how the way of the world works during this time of year. And obviously, if you're the coaches, you can't really let your guard down. You got to start preparing for LSU, but you successfully navigated signing day last week. The Bears did, in fact, sign everybody in their class. No surprises, no holdouts, no nothing. And so that's all taken care of and done. You know your bowl assignment. So really now it's watching your coaching staff and just seeing if anybody comes to try and pluck somebody away or anybody gets an opportunity elsewhere, which so far we haven't seen anything notable, although around the Big 12, we've seen a lot of chaos already. Mike Gundy in and out for, you know, like a day's period at Oklahoma State, but he's going to be back next year. Gus Malzahn's gone at UCF. They've replaced him with Scott Frost. Neil Brown's gone at West Virginia. Looks like they're probably going to replace him with Rich Rodriguez. As two Big 12 teams with both UCF and probably West Virginia go back to their exes, basically, which, as we know, that always works. So there's that, and we've just gotten this thing started. So they're kind of getting a time period to catch their breath but also have to ramp things back up. But the one thing that they are not avoiding, whether it's, you know, coaching staff or signing day or whatever, is the transfer portal. That's what something everybody's going to have to deal with in some form or fashion, whether you're playing in a bowl game or not. Everybody's got to deal with this right now. And for the Bears, compared to others like the Carousel, it's been relatively quiet, but it hasn't been completely quiet, as they have had three players that have entered the transfer portal thus far in the last 2 days since it officially opened up. And let's start off with Alvin Abasile, the redshirt sophomore offensive lineman out of Coppell, Texas. He entered his name into the transfer portal, Grayson. And your thoughts on this first edition, I guess, of the three we're going to get into here of transfer portal guys up to this point?
Yeah, pretty quickly with him, I don't think the staff wanted to lose him. I don't think they wanted him to leave, but I do think that it was an opportunity for Alvin to go try to start somewhere, and he wasn't going to start for Baylor next year. I mean, they returned four starting offensive linemen, including Sidney Fugar at left tackle. They're likely going to hit the transfer portal for a right tackle, or Caden Soraki is going to take over that position. So it didn't seem like there would be a starting opportunity for him. He had moved to guard at the end of the year as well, so he was getting some work in at that position. So while It's a tough loss. It's obviously not one that should impact Baylor much next year, but it was something that, they weren't exactly, I don't think, thrilled with, but it's one of those things where, you know, attrition happens. Like, these things happen, especially for guys that aren't starting. And he's about to be, what, a redshirt junior next year?
Yeah.
So he only has 2 years of eligibility left, so I understand why it'd be time for him to try to go get some playing time somewhere.
So he is in the transfer portal officially. 6'6", 300-plus pounder, and just still weird. You see, like, the official graphic, and he's repped by three people, which is just kind of weird. But he's got his representation, so those trio of brains will go and find him his next destination. Meanwhile, the second entry into the transfer portal, Tayshawn Wilson, redshirt freshman cornerback from Houston, also entering the portal officially.
Right, and I mean, he just, again, one of those guys just buried on the depth chart at the cornerback position. I mean, we saw a bunch of young guys play this year, whether it was Reggie Bush or LeVar Thornton. So you kind of saw the writing on the wall that there's about five cornerbacks ahead of him. They're looking to the transfer portal to add a cornerback or two to replace Lorando Johnson. Not a lot of playing time available, so once again, I kind of understand it. I really liked him when he was recruited. He was getting comparisons to the guy who played at TCU, LaDainian Tomlinson's
Trevious Hodges.
Yeah. So he got some comparisons to him because of his height and athleticism, but didn't quite translate. He also didn't obviously have a lot of time at Baylor either. He only has 3 years of eligibility remaining, but I think it'll be good for him to go get a start somewhere else.
Yes. And then the final entry so far of the three to the transfer portal, Kyan Roberts-Day. Obviously was a big signing at the time, a four-star-ish type of prospect a couple years back, but never really found his footing, right? I mean, if you're talking about, like, most guys come into a program, they're a corner, they're a wide receiver. Like, Kyan Roberts-Day was a running back, he was a tight end, he was a defender, he was, like, they tried to figure out any way to try and use him, and it never really panned out no matter where they looked for him, although the athletic traits and all that obviously were something that jumped out at you. So I think this one's kind of bittersweet because of the way he was sort of hyped up and rated. You hoped he was going to be like this big-time player for you, and it never really he never really factored in a meaningful way consistently. So hopefully he's able to find a place to go and flourish, but I know it's the end of kind of a project that's a little bit disappointing.
Right. I think he's the one of this group that I would say I'm guessing the staff would like least want to lose just because there is some talent there that is untapped, right? There's still this untapped potential. And honestly, he came in some games like the Colorado game and made an impact, had a sack in that game. I think from a pass rushing standpoint, it makes it hard to see a guy like this leave because I do think there's a ceiling there. He just needs to put it all together because the problem is he's just not quite a complete player yet. And so he's still trying to get to that point. But from a pass rushing standpoint, a good player and one that is tough to lose because he was a highly rated prospect, a very, very good athlete, and a guy who knows, maybe he goes somewhere else and has a lot of playing time and potentially a lot of success. But he's the one of the three that I think was the one that they probably didn't want to lose. And then I would also say, I saw this on our website, so I'm just going to bring it up. On Instagram story, Carmelo Jones posted that he had entered the transfer portal. That doesn't seem official yet. I haven't seen anything on 3 or anything like that, but I do think it's worth passing along.
All right, so Carmelo Jones, and yeah, I just saw actually from 247 that he has entered the transfer portal. So, okay. Yeah, so Carmelo Jones, you can add to that list as well. So four players. Anything surprising about that? Those four, I mean, I guess you just touched on that, but anything surprising or worth mentioning as far as any more portal guesses, entries, buzz at this point in time?
So Carmelo Jones, again, not surprising. The linebacker position is kind of in flux. They're bringing in three new linebackers, including Caleb Burns, the number 5 linebacker prospect in the country. They're looking at the linebacker position, the transfer portal as well. So there's a lot of moving parts there, and Carmelo just never really got it all figured out and put it all together. He just never did. And another guy who when you see him play, at times you saw some flashes, but it didn't quite all come together. I think kind of building off of that, I do expect there to be more transfer portal news as far as guys leaving Baylor. I don't think it's going to be guys who are going to – I don't think it's going to be many that factored into the equation this year that we're going to factor in next year. You know, maybe one or two, but I think in general, this is pretty much the standard of what every year is going to be like. And you got to be able to replace guys with your recruiting class and with the transfer portal. And truthfully, you need room to make all that happen. And so you do need some moving parts here and there.
So are they ready to capitalize on the momentum? We talked about it a bit during signing day. I think they're probably well aware of the missteps they had a couple years ago, but do you get that sense from them that there's an urgency to not let this 8-4, this run, this beating of the teams that you beat kind of slip through their fingertips this time around?
I do. And, I mean, you saw it in the recruiting class. They were able to solidify their top 35 recruiting class, a recruiting class with a lot of talented guys with really awesome offer lists. And that's one of the bigger things, right? These guys were wanted by a lot of high-end programs, SEC programs, you know, Big 10 programs, Big 12 programs. They won a lot of battles for the guys in this class, and then they were able to hold on to those guys. And I think that's a really good sign going forward. Now, as far as the transfer portal goes, I think they're in a great position because they have a lot of opportunities available. They have starting spots available. They have production available. And they're a team that I think most people would agree is kind of ascending going into next year. You're bringing back a quarterback that, in my eyes, was a top two quarterback in the Big 12 this year by the end of the season. You're bringing in a lot of different parts on offense, including four guys on your offensive line. You have a really good head coach who is a defensive-minded guy, which I think is very intriguing to defensive transfer portal prospects. So, yeah, I think they're in a great position to go capitalize on this and take advantage, unlike after the 2021 season when they really should have taken more advantage of the transfer portal. I think now they're much more equipped with it, with their commitment to NIL and to actually utilizing the transfer portal.
So elsewhere, that's pretty much the football news. You signed your full class last week. You've got four entries into the transfer portal. You're obviously combing over that to get your own possible additions as well. But in that news over the last few days, there was also the All-Big 12 honors that were released by the conference ahead of the championship game. And not a lot to note here, but we'll at least mention the Baylor flavoring. And quite frankly, not a team at the beginning of the year that you thought you'd care all that much about. And then by the end, they had a good number of entries. But in a weird turn of events, a series of honors that you didn't really think you'd need to care too much about, you actually get maybe a little ticked off at by the time it actually rolls around in a couple of cases, and the fact that there was actually some flat-out disrespect maybe on this list for Baylor players. But we can go over that and see just how much there possibly was here. We'll start off with the fact they got no superlatives, which isn't a huge shock. I mean, there weren't really guys that were guaranteed spots there as far as the like player of the year type of honor. You had Shador Sanders on offense. You had Travis Hunter on defense. I did think Bryson Washington had a chance to be the offensive newcomer of the year, but instead that's Jordan Tyson of Arizona State. Thought maybe he could be freshman of the year, but that was Sam Levitt of Arizona State. So the Arizona State guys, I think, prevented Bryson Washington from being able to get one of those two awards. But you had defensive newcomer B.J. Green of Colorado, defensive freshman Josiah Trotter of West Virginia, who's in the transfer portal. So West Virginia still searching for their coach. Special teams player of the year, Will Farron, BYU, Jalen Knoll of Iowa State. Offensive lineman, Wyatt Milam of West Virginia. Defensive lineman, Brandon Mott, K-State. Coach of the year, Kenny Dillingham, no surprise, from Arizona State. And then scholar athletes of the year, Taj Brooks and Jalen Daniels. So those are the superlatives. Anything jump out to you as far as any major snub there? I don't feel like it. I think that, again, you had Bryson Washington could have contended for one, but Arizona State's the flavor of the month, and both those guys, and Levitt and Tyson, I mean, they're obviously riding pretty high right now.
I think Levitt and Tyson were fine selections there over Bryson. You know, it took Bryson a little while to get going this year, and I think that probably prevented him from putting up the numbers that he could have put up and probably winning this award had he started as strong as he finished. The one that I do have a problem with when we're just looking at those is, why is Josh Cameron not the return man of the year? that's where I kind of had an issue with that. I know Jalen Knoll's a good returner as well, but Josh Cameron's numbers were better all year. So I don't quite understand the category there as to why Jalen Noel won it outside of maybe being a bigger name or, you know, being around longer or whatnot. But I felt like Josh Cameron was very impactful in that role this year.
Then as far as the first and second team go, which that's just the first and second team, nothing beyond that officially. There was one player on the All Big 12 first team, but it wasn't an actual offensive player. It was special teams. So they put the return men on the offensive side, and they put the punter on the defensive side. So technically, Josh Cameron was first team All Big 12 as a kick returner, punt returner, along with Jalen Noel. Or is it Noel or Noel? I think it's Jalen Noel.
Wow.
Yeah, I think so. I'm just, for some reason, doubting myself here as we talk through this. But, yeah, that was kind of weird to see because we just mentioned that he was not the superlative special teams player of the year, but he is first team all Big 12, whereas Noel was both of those things. So, yeah, just kind of weird how that worked out.
Yeah, not again, that's the one that I have a gripe with as far as, you know, those superlative awards. But outside of that, there's only one other thing that I have a major gripe with, which we'll get to here in a sec.
First team all Big 12 defense. So the Josh Cameron as a return man, first team all Big 12 offense. First team all Big 12 defense, you had Matt Jones and Keaton Thomas, both linebackers, both I think speak for themselves there. But you also had punter Palmer Williams as well listed with the defense. So a trio there. So four first team all Big 12 selections, not too shabby. You had, I think, a bit more when you won the Big 12 title, but you look and there's a lot of Arizona State on here. That's just kind of how it works with the best teams. Usually have the most guys, and Baylor, I think, finishing around fourth, probably had a fair share of their players on here when all was said and done. So, yeah, first team all Big 12 selections, they end up with four guys, and as I just mentioned, Jones, Thomas, and then Palmer Williams on defense.
Very notable that two linebackers are on the first team. With Dave Randa taking over as defense coordinator and linebackers coach, that is extremely notable that there's two of them on first team. Matt Jones had the career year that I think everyone's been waiting for. Keaton Thomas comes in from a JUCO program and just immediately becomes an all-Big 12 guy. I mean, it's no surprise. That's really special stuff there by Jamar Chaney and Dave Randa. Palmer Williams had an awesome year. I don't know how he wasn't up for national awards. I felt like he was extremely impactful. And you look in those earlier games where they struggled offensively, Palmer really gave them chances to win those games because of how well he was punting.
Meanwhile, on the second team selections for all Big 12, nobody on the defensive side of the second team, but you did have on offense Michael Trigg, tight end. So second team all Big 12 for him. And then again, nobody on defense on that second team. So that's it as far as the all-teamers go, just Michael Trigg on that second team. And I think that one kind of speaks for itself. I will say, though, this is a gripe I have with all postseason selections. There's not four tight ends on the field at the same time. So you have four tight ends on the second team all Big 12. Like, talk about, like, here, you get a ribbon, and you get a ribbon, and you get a, like, come on, man, four tight ends on the same second team. Like, I just think that's BS, and I don't see there's really any legitimate reason for that because there's not seven wide receivers and three quarterbacks, right. So I don't know why you have four tight ends. You have more tight ends than wide receivers on the second team. But whatever, he's one of those four tight ends on the second team.
And nice to see Trigg make the impact he did this year. I think there were a lot of question marks with him coming into Baylor for obvious reasons. Things didn't work out at USC and Ole Miss, but man, he showed a lot of flashes this year, was really good for them. And, you know, if he comes back next year, I think he's going to be a big weapon for them. And so that's going to be an interesting one to monitor over the coming weeks and into the offseason, I think.
And then as far as honorable mention goes, you had Omar Agbedian, offensive lineman, Josh Cameron as a wide receiver and also special teams player of the year, Lorando Johnson at defensive back, Trevin Mai at defensive line, Jackie Marshall, D-line, Keaton Thomas, defensive newcomer of the year, Bryson Washington, offensive newcomer of the year and offensive freshman of the year, and then Gavin Yates as fullback. Those all honorable mentions. So that right there is your all Big 12 listing for Baylor, and not bad. I mean, not bad at all, given where you were early on in the season, you thought you'd maybe have like a guy on one of these teams, and you ended up with a handful of first and second teamers and then a handful of honorable mentions as well. But yeah, your thoughts on those honorable mentions, and also I know you've got a big complaint about this list.
So seven guys on the list that we just mentioned will be back next year or have the eligibility to come back next year. I think that's worth noting, you know, that they're going to return a lot of production going into next season and guys who earn some of these awards or honorable mentions. My gripe is the second team quarterback, I believe, was Sam Levitt, right? Shedeur Sanders was the first team quarterback. Sam Levitt had a really good year. I'm not going to disrespect the year that he had, but Cam Scataboo was the reason that offense was so successful this year. He was phenomenal. We saw it again in the Big 12 championship game. I just don't think there's any world that Sam Levitt was a better quarterback this year than Sorrell Robertson was. And then even worse than that, Sorrell Robertson didn't even get honorable mention, whereas I believe five other quarterbacks did in the Big 12, for ranging from Rocco Beck to Josh Hoover. I just think that is there's a lot of disrespect there when it comes to that. I mean, this guy was number five in the nation in total QBR. I mean, we're talking about the list is basically Dylan Gabriel, Jalen Milroe, Jackson Dart, and Sorrell Robertson, and Cam Ward. That's who he is lumped in with, and we're not even making him an honorable mention. That's crazy in my eyes. I just can't – I don't know how they came up with that. I don't know how they overlooked him so badly. But, yeah, that's my big gripe with this.
They were too busy adding tight ends to the second team, I suppose. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that's definitely a gripe you can make. I don't think there's too many others. You know, it's a crowded running back room. Bryson Washington was great, but, like, that's one area where you're like, all right, Scataboo, Neal, Brooks, like, all these guys. Wide receivers, they were good, but I don't think anybody – like, Josh Cameron, maybe you could make an argument for – as far as second team, but he was right there on the precipice of it. But, I mean, overall, pretty good showing. Pretty nice little postseason honors for a handful of guys, and something that you celebrate and then move on from, but definitely worth mentioning here. So there's kind of the football notes for right now. We'll have more on LSU next week, and then we'll have a week off for Christmas, and then they'll have the bowl game shortly thereafter. So we'll preview mostly next week on the actual Texas Bowl itself, but there's all Big 12, there's transfer portal, and there's all the football notes for right now. Meanwhile, on the basketball side of things, not going well for the men. They are out of the top 25, Grayson, and they just came off of a win against Abilene Christian yesterday, where they were able to really put it on ACU, 88-57, blowout win at home, just down the road from here, and a big night for a lot of different guys as far as just scoring, but Jaden Nunn with 18 points, helping lead the way for the Bears last night. Also had Ojanwuna with 13, Omir with 15, Edgecombe with 14, and then off the bench you had Love with 10, so five players and double figures with Jaden Nunn, electric player, VJ Edgecombe, Mr. Electricity, mm-hmm. I feel like, though. That's really the label that applies to him. But, yeah, five players in double figures, and their sixth win of the year now, 6-3. They're 4-0 at home, but they are, as I mentioned, out of that top 25. They'll get Utah Tech coming up next. Wait, wrong page here as I jumped over to the ladies. Sorry about that. But for the Baylor men, after that win over ACU, they will have, Norfolk State coming up tomorrow at 11 a.m. They are 6-4, so that's what's up next. A little early action here during the holiday season for Scott Drew and the men.
Baylor has a really nice schedule coming up to just kind of gain confidence before getting into Big 12 play. It's been a really rough non-conference for them. Not so much that they're, you know, losing to bad teams, but just so much as, you know, you put them up against some of the best teams in the nation and they just haven't come through so far this year. And that's going to have to flip in Big 12 play as, you know, basically every week you're playing a team that is of the caliber of some of those teams that you played in the non-conference. So that's something that needs to flip. Very excited to see how they played against ACU. They really dominated this game from start to finish. Nice to see that Norchad Omir, 15.6 rebounds. He only played 17 minutes. He was 7 of 7 from the field or from the floor, and he's a guy who I think they need to limit his minutes over these next few games. You can't afford really any more injuries. So seeing him be so efficient and then not having to play a ton is really nice to see and allow these other guys to gain some confidence as they gear up for Big 12 play coming up soon.
And then meanwhile, for the ladies, got a win over UNLV on Sunday, 71-64. They'll turn around and play Utah Tech tomorrow at 11 a.m. Got that right this time. That is their matchup. And then right after that, it's Big 12 play starting to ramp up. So, yeah, one more after that win for over UNLV, Utah Tech tomorrow at 11 a.m. So for you folks wanting to take in this middle-of-the-day game, which is kind of rare, that's a good opportunity for you tomorrow here in Waco.
Right, and yeah, the women's basketball team is playing better. They're on a run right now where they're starting to gain some confidence. I think, once again, that's important going into the Big 12 season. If you look at the Big 12 on the women's side, a lot of teams with one or two losses, kind of up and down for the conference. So it's a deep league, at least we think that right now. Not a ton of high-end teams, I don't think, but there are a few really good teams that could make some noise, I think, in the tournament and are going to be tough outs during conference play.
So there you go. And as we get to the other side of the holidays, basketball obviously take on a bigger focus as they start to get into conference play, but still a little bit of work to do before they get there. But yeah, a lot to still work on for both programs, but sitting in a nice spot, still a lot ahead of them. But yeah, about to ramp up here in a major way here in the next few weeks. So there's a little bit of basketball update, but let's get into the mailbag this week and start off with Bear Raid 23. Can you make a case for Baylor to prioritize potential over production in the portal and then flip that production instead of potential? Trying to understand where Baylor can get best bang for their buck if they choose to go one strategy first, the other. For context on the question, Cignetti has been clear Indiana prioritized production at other schools over high potential, highly rated recruits that haven't seen much action. Thanks.
Okay, so I think Baylor's going to do a little bit of both. I think it's important to do a little bit of both because, again, so if you go with the potential route, it's very hard for Baylor to land guys who were five-star prospects out of high school. It's very hard for Baylor to land a lot of four-star prospects. So the transfer portal allows you to add guys who do have NFL talent. Look at Michael Trigg, for instance. Look at Steve Linton, for instance. Those guys have NFL talent. You just saw kind of how they produce. Now, on the flip side, production's important as well, and Baylor went out and added a guy like Ashton Hawkins, who doesn't look like an NFL guy, but is a guy who was ultra productive at Texas State. You knew what you were going to get out of him. So I think it's important to do both. I'm not going to pick one over the other, to be honest with you. And I know it worked for Cignetti at Indiana. I will also mention that Cignetti also knew a lot of those guys from James Madison. So he didn't just know that they were productive. He also knew how they played and how they fit in his scheme. And so I think that was an important part of what he did at IU. And I think Baylor is going to do a mixture of both. And I think it's important for Baylor to do a mixture of both.
Bears always win based on who's entered the portal. What is our wide receiver list?
Yeah, see, this is where things get a little tough because saying a wide receiver list, I mean, they have a lot of guys who they're looking at in the portal right now. So I don't think it's great to just name a couple guys. You know, if you want a few, okay, so for instance, they're looking at North Texas transfer wide receiver DT Sheffield. He's really good, fits the slot role really well. They're losing both Monterey Baldwin and Ashton Hawkins. They need a slot receiver. He would fill that role. He's got 1 year of eligibility. So they're looking for clearly a slot type guy like that. If you look at the outside, we've mentioned Texas Tech wide receiver Mike Hudson. He's in the transfer portal. Going to be a tough one to land because A&M, Texas, LSU, Oklahoma, lots of other schools are offering him and really trying to recruit him hard. We'll see how that kind of works out. There's a few other guys as well. I'm going to save that more for the premium side. I'm not going to dive too deep into that. I do have an article coming soon that lists I think I have like 14 wide receiver transfers who seem to be really good fits for Baylor. And then a few guys kind of that I went more in depth on. So if you want to check that out, check out the premium side.
How many more transfers out are we looking at? Any significant transfers out?
I think they're going to lose a few more transfers. And I think maybe maybe a significant, you know, one or two, and I don't even know how significant they will be, but I could see that happening. I mean, again, you're going to have attrition at times, but one thing I will say is Dave Randa has been really good at retaining players, especially players who they, you know, have a vision for and who are going to play for them next year. They've done an amazing job at keeping those type of guys, so I don't think there's going to be too much, but I do think there will be some.
ZT Smith 423, how do the coaching staffs keep up with all the transfer portal madness? When they bring a transfer in, do they have them do drills? Thank you guys for all the content you put out.
Okay, so I guess the first part of that question, handling the madness, I mean, it's just a lot of scouting and evaluation, a lot of phone calls, a lot of, and it's not even just phone calls with, you know, the prospective recruit. It's phone calls with agents. It's phone calls with previous coaches to see how they were, you know, at that specific school. So that's how they keep up with it. I mean, there's a lot of work involved with this. It's like a whole nother recruiting cycle, but it's very condensed because you don't have as much time to go through and scout everyone before, you know, guys start taking visits and committing elsewhere. So you really have to be thorough and quick. And also you kind of have to game plan for guys who you think are going to enter the portal. I think that's an important part of it as well. As far as bringing in a transfer and having them do drills, no. That is not part of the process as what I understand. When you bring in a guy, it's usually just you're bringing them in on an official visit, telling them where you see them fitting in the offense or defense, talking about NIL, talking about the culture at Baylor, talking with the coaches, building a relationship. That's more so it. You have to do your homework before you bring them on campus because it's not like they're doing a combine out there.
Useless Kim Degree. One, it seems like Baylor experiences far less turnover than its peers in the portal. Do you believe this is something specific the coaching staff is doing or just an anomaly?
Oh, it's specific to the coaching staff, and it's a big reason why I encouraged people to understand the reason why Dave Aranda succeeding is important. The players really like playing for Dave Aranda. The players really like the culture that has been established with the coaching staff, and obviously that's by extension through Dave Aranda because he's the guy that brought in all these coaches. I think it's been extremely important. This person over player thing, I know it wasn't great when Baylor wasn't using NIL, but now that they are and you're still preaching that and that is still part of your DNA, it's very important and players love that.
How impactful is it for teams to lose large quantities of depth pieces or second team players during the bowl practices, winter workout portion of the year? Are the added reps, lack of bodies at practice even noticeable?
I mean, I think they can be if you're losing a ton of guys. I think if you're only losing a couple, it's not that big of a deal. So yeah, I guess that's the only way I can say it. I think that, you know, again, in general, these bowl practices, the young guys are getting a lot more reps than they would have during the season. So it's more for them. So as long as you're not losing a ton of those guys, yeah, you should be fine.
Let's see here. CJSA, you wrote that Taz Williams was the most offered prospect in the nation. Could you explain what that means and why the number one recruit in the class or a five-star recruit wouldn't hold that title instead?
Right. So most offered prospect, I mean, Taz has, what, 55 offers or something crazy like that. I'll say this, you know, yeah, it's a very valid question asking why the number one recruit wouldn't have that many offers, but again, it's one of those things where the number one recruit in the nation might have narrowed his offer list down and schools don't offer him, whereas Taz got a lot of offers, even from smaller schools, ranging from small schools to big schools. Sometimes when you go look up the number one prospect in the nation, they have like two G5 offers, and then all the other offers are Power 4 offers, in which it's a little bit harder to get your numbers up to the point where you have 55 offers or whatever it is. That's a really absurd number, to be honest.
Doc Crow, is Nate Bennett good enough to come in and guide the team to victory in the instance of a Sawyer Robertson injury in this bowl game and next season, or do we need to bring in an older quarterback to battle for spot number two with him?
See, I think Nate Bennett is a good quarterback. I think he's got a bright future. I think he's proven a lot of people wrong during his time at Baylor. They're going to bring in Edward Griffin as an early enrollee as well, so they're building depth there. But I think in general, they should bring in another quarterback because these guys are still young. I mean, we're talking about Nate Bennett will just be a redshirt freshman. It's tough to ask any redshirt freshman to be ready by year number two to be the full-time backup quarterback. And not only that, to go out and just win you a bunch of football games. I think bringing in another quarterback with a lot of experience would help set the floor in case something did happen with Sawyer Robertson, especially because Baylor has so many expectations going into next year.
If you had to pick a single position to bring in the top player, the portal, make the biggest impact next year, what position and who would it be?
Oh, who would it be? Okay, that makes things a little bit tougher. I would say I think I look at wide receiver. I know that edge can be argued as well, and maybe field safety too. But I think a star-studded wide receiver would make a lot of sense for Baylor. I think it could open up things for Cyril Robertson even more. Why not? I'll go with Micah Hudson if I could pick one.
If Caleb Burns projects better at weak side linebacker rather than middle, would he be in contention with Keaton Thomas for snaps, or would the two be out there together despite one playing slightly out of position, or should KB play backup weak side and we bring in a solid one-year middle?
I think this is something that the staff's probably working on right now. I think that you could play them together. If Caleb Burns comes in and is obviously a starter, then yeah, you play them together. I think KT Thomas would do just fine playing Mike linebacker, but I also think Baylor's going to look in the portal and see if they can't find someone who's proven, you know, has proven production at the linebacker position. And then you would probably also play Caleb Burns as a backup or a blitzer of some kind, get him on the field. But yeah, I think they're trying to make that decision right now. Honestly, I think I'd probably bring in someone if you can find someone that is really, really good, like a bona fide elite starter. If you can find that and actually win that recruiting battle, then that's probably the route that I would go.
Wyatt Smith, do you think the LSU game is personal for Aranda? Will we see his best defensive performance yet?
I don't think it's personal for Aranda. I mean, I don't see why it would be. It's not like they fired him. Like, he made the decision to leave LSU. I think he enjoyed his time at LSU. As far as his best defensive performance, I can't imagine them having a better defensive performance than they wasn't the one they had against Kansas. But, you know, maybe they'll play really well. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't think it's personal. I don't think he's that type of guy, really. And he has no grudge to carry with LSU. I mean, a lot of people there loved him. He didn't get the shine at the end. The offense did. Joe Brady, Joe Burrow, all that stuff. But he did help them win a national championship, and it was the last one they had. And he was really liked by a lot of people. So I think he went out and did what was best for him. In fact, you had a lot of people who wished he would have stuck around. But, yeah, I don't think there's anything personal or any reason to be anything but looking back fondly at that time. And I don't think looking back fondly really plays into the attitudes of this game or playing a certain style, as opposed to if, like, you were pissed off and you had a chip on your shoulder and you were, you know, really geared up. I think it's just a respect thing here, so that didn't really play into that. But I'm sure he wants to beat them. Like, you know, definitely wants to win, whether it's LSU or anybody else. If Coach Spav leaves, who would you replace him with?
Ooh, I don't think Spav's going to leave. I think that he's going to stay at Baylor. I guess if I had to replace him, I mean, I would stick with kind of that air raid tree, though. I'm not going back, you know, away from this spread type offense. You know, an interesting name, just because part of it, you know, he's from my home, you know, in San Antonio, Clint Kellogg, the head coach at Incarnate Word. I think that would be a really interesting one, because we've seen the ascension from these guys at Incarnate Word, from Eric Morris to G.J. Kinney, of course. And so I think Clint would make a lot of sense if you were to lose Jake Spavital. You bring him in, and I think he's kind of one of those rising coaches who will be a head coach soon. But I think he'd do some good things and continue this trend of explosive offense.
Out of the transfers announced, who are the three most likely you think we will get?
I think Jalen Braxton, the Arkansas transfer, the cornerback. I think he's one that Baylor's probably going to sit in a good position with. They'll probably get him on a visit. I think it's tough to say who they're going to land without kind of having visits planned already and without kind of knowing where all they're going to go, because Jalen Braxton's going to take a lot of visits. So again, this isn't me saying they're going to land him, but it is me saying that I think they're in a good position to potentially land him. Texas Tech offense lineman Ty Buchanan, he's supposed to take a visit here coming up soon. He'd make a lot of sense at the right tackle position. So I'll just roll with those two names for now. Those are the two names that I've, I guess, heard the most about at this point, but I'm sure we'll have more as visits kind of get announced over the week or so.
Jeff Grimes of Wisconsin, how do you think this plays out? As always, thank you. Thank you, Wyatt.
Thanks, Wyatt. I mean, I think Grimes will do fine at Wisconsin. I think it's set up really well. When Grimes has a good offensive line, usually the offense is pretty good, and I expect Wisconsin to have that. I think he'll do fine there. I'm sure that Wisconsin fans at some point during the season will have their gripes or be upset with the offense, kind of like Kansas was, but I think some of that is really not on Jeff Grimes, to be honest with you.
No, I mean, Kansas started to flourish towards the end of the year. Jalen Daniels played better. They obviously didn't play very well against Baylor. I can see why there are Kansas fans who are thrilled, and there definitely are. There are Kansas fans who are very happy about the news, and there are Wisconsin fans who are not happy with the news. So it'll be up to him to go and prove them wrong. But, I mean, understandable. It was a really rough go of things in Lawrence for a large portion of the season until that last month or so. But, yeah, good luck to him, and let's see what he can do. I think running the football is very Wisconsin football, so that'll fit in quite nicely. But beyond that, don't really have any big picture thoughts, but wish him well. And we'll see, you know, how KU, with Jalen Daniels coming back and a new OC for the third time in 3 years, how they perform next year in the Big 12. Billy 21, but I will say this, Luke Fickell needs to hope Jeff Grimes works out really well, because he's done nothing of note so far after that hot Cincinnati run. So you got to think that time's kind of ticking a little bit on him, and he needs Grimes to help them start to make more of an impactful showing in the Big Ten. Billy 21, has Baylor scheduled any visitors from the portal? What are your prospects from the portal and the Frisco wide receiver portal entry from Aransas still interested?
Don't know.
Or Arkansas, maybe? Is there a wide receiver portal entry from Frisco from Arkansas or something?
Not that I know of. Maybe he's talking about Jalen Braxton, the cornerback. That sounds more likely. Yeah, I mean, there's still interest there. I mentioned a couple guys that are visiting. I have more in my notes that I posted on the premium side. As far as other visitors, I think those will come through the coming weeks. Baylor's still making a lot of calls and contacts, honestly, with a lot of the guys in this class, in this portal cycle, and still trying to, I think, figure out their priority guys as well. And so as that kind of unfolds, I will, of course, update everyone on the premium side. Yes, the Brown cornerback is still in play for Baylor. And you're, of course, talking about Isaiah Reed. He took a visit to Texas Tech. Baylor postponed his visit. I think they wanted to see, you know, more of who's going to enter the portal before they bring someone in and go all in on getting them to commit. But I do think Reed is still expected to take a visit at this moment.
And BU grad 21, why hasn't Daquan Finn entered the portal yet? Does he have to wait for his waiver to be approved first, or is there something else at play?
So I believe he's got to wait for his waiver, because technically he's not eligible to play anywhere right now. So until that happens, I think it's a waiting game, but I do not believe that he's going to return to Baylor.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why any party would want that, other than if he just wants, like, if they want to offer up another deal, which they're not going to, then yeah, I don't see how it benefits really anybody. But if you don't have an extra year to play, there's nowhere to commit to play, because what are you committing to if you don't have a year? So he's got to wait on that. But will be interesting to see if he gets that or not. But that'll close it out as far as the mailbag goes. Thank you to everybody who we just rifled through. And actually, I had, you know what, one more. Let me try to circle back to this so I don't forget this time, and I can just check this off the list. Remember that question I had last week? Oh, yeah. 360 B-Bear. Can you rank the Texas schools in order as we end the regular season? I don't want to go to, like, ACU and whatever, so let's do, like, the main Power Four schools, and we'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Texas.
Texas is number one.
And then where do you want to – SMU's, I think Baylor, number two.
Or, yeah.
SMU, they're a playoff team.
Yeah, they are.
Right. And then Baylor, three.
I would put Baylor at three.
A&M four. Texas Tech.
I'd put TCU ahead of Tech. I'd put TCU at – and then Tech, probably. Is there anyone else?
Houston.
Yeah. Is Houston better than Texas State? Or we're not going to dive into those. So,
I don't really want to get into that, because then we got to start, like, where are we putting Tarleton?
UTSA.
In this?
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
I mean, how far are we going here? UTEP. I mean, what do we want to do? So, yeah, I think as far as the Power Fours, let's run that down again. You got Texas, SMU, Baylor, A&M, TCU, Tech, Houston.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That sounds about right, and that does answer 360's question that had been holding over. And so 360, hopefully that is to your liking. I know we could start, you know, going 6-7. Where's North Texas? But we're going to leave it there. And if you want a wider look, then be sure to wrap around and ask a question again. But hopefully that was what you were looking for there, and glad we finally got to that. So, Grayson, anything before we head on out of here?
Just be sure to check out the Sikkim 365 premium site. I have a in-depth transfer portal article. I think everyone will be excited to read that. We have a trial going on right now, 2 months for $5 if you're a new member to the site. So be sure to check that out. We got basketball coverage, football coverage going into the bowl game as well. So just be sure to check that out. We got all kinds of exciting stuff. And of course, 365 Sports from 3 to 6 Monday through Friday as well, where you can catch Craig on the radio too to talk all college football, honestly.
Yeah, talking CFP and coaching carousel and a lot of other just interesting things going on with college football. Some of them will leave you scratching your head about where we are and what game we're covering sometimes, like the Dylan Edwards news and like all these headlines you're seeing now of guys agreeing to new deals, and it's like, what sport are we watching? But that's the sport that it's become now. It's just interesting to see that with no parameters but being reported on like it's the NFL, but the NFL actually has like rules. So it's just weird to see like guy agrees to new deal and it's $1.5 million a year or whatever. I'm still getting used to that a little bit, but it does make for a more interesting offseason is the point. So you've got the portal stuff, new deals, coaching carousel, and so much else going on the field with bowl season now starting up as well, including Baylor and LSU coming up on New Year's Eve in Houston, as we started off talking about, and we will continue to talk about next week on the Bearcast, our final episode before Christmas break. So get your questions in for that, and we'll be gearing up for that as well over the next week. So hope you have a good one, and until we talk again, thanks to Garrett Ross and also Grayson Grudenhafer, I'm Craig Smoke, and this has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.